The Orange FM.
Ready to form Voltron. Activate interlocks. Dinotherms connected. Infracell up. Mega thrusters are go.
Welcome, Voltron fans. This is Mark Morrell, and we're back on Let's Voltron podcast, and we're here for the first time officially in 2014, and we're looking forward to a great year of 30th anniversary special stuff. And I'm here with Mike French from Retro Blasting, and he's also now the official administrator of the official Voltron Facebook and Twitter accounts. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks. It's glad to be here. I'm really excited for 2014. This is going to be a great 30th anniversary year.
Yeah, I think so too. For the fans who don't know you very well, and I'm sure they've seen a little bit of your work on Retro Blasting, but you just recently did some interviews at St. Louis at World Events Productions.
Yes.
And in doing that, you've gotten to know a few things that maybe some of our listeners don't know yet. And you can also go into a little bit more detail about what it's been like for at least these first couple weeks of 2014 being the administrator of the Facebook and Twitter accounts.
Sure thing. The last few weeks as the official administrator of the Voltron Facebook and Twitter have been really exciting. The fan base is very enthusiastic. They're a lot of fun. They don't let you get away with many mistakes, and that's good because that means they're plugged in. We've been pushing some of the exciting announcements that have come out so far, one of them being the Robotech Voltron comic book, which was a really highly anticipated product, and it's the first issue's landed. It's been a great success. Tommy Yoon drew the covers. It looks beautiful, and we're only on issue number one, and it's already getting good buzz, so I can't wait to see the next four issues roll out. Of course, we're also anticipating the Toynami 30th anniversary diecast, which will be coming out soon. That's going to have sort of the upgraded special edition treatment from the original masterpiece diecast. It's going to have electronic light up eyes. It's going to have all five lion blades on a sound effect base that it's going to come with. The sword has its own special stand. It's a beautiful piece. And yes, I went to WEP a few months back to talk with them about some of their other upcoming projects and got some interesting info. One of the things that they're working on for the European market is they're working on a relaunch of Denver the Last Dinosaur, and they look to make it a live-action product, and that's in the development stages right now. I understand that they've got some scripts that they're working on, and they're trying to get that off the ground. And what was really exciting to me was to find out that they're also pushing a new Saber Rider product into development. They have a Saber Rider digital comic that they're working on, and they're going to try and get that launched sometime this year, which is really, really cool because Saber Rider was an immensely cool show from back in the 80s. And if you haven't checked it out, it's on DVD. I highly recommend looking at it because if you like Voltron, you'll love Saber Rider. You know, it's got Peter Cullen as the voice of the main robot, and it's got, you know, four cool characters, three of which are these pilot types, just like Voltron. Great show. And then, you know, this is the 30th anniversary. This is 2014, so this is going to be a year-long celebration. You know, we just had Classic Media through DreamWorks take over the Voltron licensing machine, and they're hard at work in conjunction with Toynami, and they're looking for other licensees, and they're going to roll this out all year. And as you heard, they're also working on trying to reinvent Voltron for a new movie, which I'm very excited to hear how that's going to pan out. So this is going to be a great year for Voltron, and I'm really excited to have jumped on board as the official Facebook administrator. It's a fan's dream come true. I'm a lifelong Voltron fan. And like you guys, I just want to see what happens over the next 12 months. It's gonna be awesome.
Right. Yeah, right. It is going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to everything that's coming out this year, and I'm looking forward to going to the conventions and having fans actually get to interact with, you know, everything that's going on with all the toys, all the you know, the comic books, the movie, the, you know, everything that might be happening towards the end of this season. You know, coming up in September is the official 30th anniversary, and we've also got that anniversary book that's coming out from Viz Media. So I wanted to go back and ask you a question about the fan interaction on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You've posted a couple of pictures and things like that, and have you noticed that you get an immediate reaction, or is it slow in coming out, or, you know, how quickly do people react to these things?
Well, Bob Koppler and Jeremy, they kind of gave me carte blanche going forward. You know, they have some scheduled things for WEP, obviously, but then they said, you know, with the rest of these postings, you know, just kind of get out there and engage the fans. And what I've found is that the fans are immediate to respond. They're largely enthusiastic, but like I said, they don't make mistakes, and they're very discerning. So they'll find funny things about your photos or your posts. And the other interesting thing about it is that they don't all immediately know my face with my name yet. So, for example, yesterday I posted a photograph of myself in the Voltron hoodie. And I had cardboard lion hands and a cardboard black lion head on, and I was holding a blazing sword that I'd made out of foil tape and a yardstick. And I joked about how the hoodie makes a good costume if you just have some cardboard and paint. Well, right. The comments that came back were largely, you know, awesome, well done, good job. And then a few people were like, oh my gosh, that must be so embarrassing for that young man. And it's kind of like, I don't think they realize that it's not me finding a photo online. It's actually me. Like, I'm like, uh-huh. I'm not embarrassed. That's me. So I think it's going to take some time for people to put a face with a name, but I'm hoping that we'll get there. I posted a photo a few days before that of, I think it was the day before, of me holding up some Voltron books from back in the 80s. I'm really hoping that people – they're very connected to the posts.
Yes,
they love the toys and stuff that I'm pulling out of the archive at Retro Blasting. And you know, I took a photo the other day to sort of help get people jazzed about the Robotech Voltron team up. I took a photo of the Toynami diecast Voltron alongside a Robotech Veritech fighter toy.
And yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and one of the first comments that came up was, you know, that that Veritech isn't in scale with Voltron. He should probably be about as tall as his foot, maybe up to his calf. And I was like, okay, these guys are hardcore. So,
yes.
Yeah. I was like, guys, it's more symbolic than it's supposed to be realistic. It's all good.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So we've also had some interaction with our fans through the Let's Voltron podcast, obviously. The last podcast we did, we sort of opened up the mailbag, and we answered some questions from the fans. And of course, you know, you don't always get to answer the questions in a way that the fans would like. You can't give, you know, all the information all the time, and you can't give them the answer they want either, because, you know, we all wanted the Voltron Force toys. Obviously, we all wanted to be able to play with a Voltcom or, you know, the new Lion Voltron, you know. So with all the lions that we saw, you know, that were actually in the prototype versions from Mattel. So you know, we can't always give you what you want.
That's true.
But it's nice to know that we're here in case you know, you do have some questions and stuff like that, and we can talk about them. So at any point, you know, post on the comments, post on the Facebook page and in the Twitter account. And the last time that we talked, we were just joking at the time. We were talking about the Wrecking Maces from Hunk, you know, when it was Yellow Center. And I had just joked about the wrecking ball thing with Miley Cyrus and everything. And then Jeremy had mentioned about how, oh, great, now, you know, Chitoy is going to go out there and draw a Wrecking Mace with Alora and Keith, and she did. Yesterday she posted it, and she sent it to us on Twitter, and it was awesome. I mean, just to have that type of interaction. So I encourage people to participate on the Twitter, on the Facebook, and through the official Facebook and Twitter through Voltron as well, because that's where it happens. And, you know, we've still got Voltron forums out there on Voltron.com. And, you know, there's plenty of ways for you guys to get in touch with us and do things. And I also wanted to let people know that there is an official email, and we are looking to, at some point, start our own email chain of fans and everything. So we might get to the point where we get to an email newsletter, and we're kind of looking forward to that. Let's Voltron Podcast at gmail.com is our official email. I'll say that again. Let's Voltron Podcast, all one word, at gmail.com. Okay?
And I'm very conscientious about questions on the Facebook and Twitter, and when they're directed at the official Voltron channels, I try and answer them as quickly as possible. So
Good. So we're going to work into our next segment here, and what we wanted to do was we wanted to sort of do a history of Voltron toys. So what we're going to do is we're going to start, you know, in the early days, even before 1984, and we're going to work our way up to current day. And Mike, I know you have a lot to contribute on this. So what do you say we get this segment started?
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it. Let's do it.
All right, Mike, so what most fans out there want to know, and you've got a little bit of a history with Voltron toys and everything, is were there actual toys that came out before 1984's Voltron release?
Yes. It's very interesting to see how that sort of the origin of Voltron toys, because as we've revealed in the last few years, and what many fans have already known, is that Voltron was based off of two original Japanese television shows, Beast King Go Lion and Dairugger 15, Armored Fleet Dairugger 15. And so those shows were on in Japan a few years before Voltron landed in the United States. And the Japanese love their toys just like we do. So the first Voltron toys to really land were in Japan. And you had for Lion Force, you had three major toys. You had there were two by a company called Popee. Now, Popee was eventually absorbed by Bandai, which is still around. Mm-hmm. Popee made two toys. They made the GB35, which you might know better, or our listeners might know better, as the Mini Matchbox Voltron. But originally, it was the GB35 Beast King Go Lion. And what made it unique from the American version was that it had firing feet and firing heads on it. It was the first Voltron toy released. It came with a sword and a shield. The other cool thing about that toy, which is very unique to almost anything Go Lion Voltron, is that the box art not only had a cool cutaway on the back that showed Voltron standing, but then it had this cutaway image of the inner workings of the robot itself, which was really neat. But this box also was so early on in Go Lion's run in Japan that this box depicted Sven on the box rather than the princess. So this box had the original five pilots. He was called Shiragane in Go Lion. But if you look, the princess is not on that box. It's the five original pilots.
Okay.
Then they went on to the deluxe, the GB36, which was better known for us as the legendary Matchbox Diecast Voltron. That's the large 12-inch Voltron that separates and transforms into the lions, and it has the firing heads. Now, the Japanese one came in this glorious box with gilded gold details on the front and had the five pilots on the front, but it was the princess now. The Sven had disappeared from the box by this point, and it was the princess on the box. What makes this toy so cool and so collectible is that imagine the Matchbox toy on just like steroids, like the special edition of it. It had all the missiles. It had all the missile launchers and the blades. It had the sword. It had the shield. It had all that stuff that the American market felt was a choking hazard. So they removed it before it came to the U.S. Some of the earliest ones have some pretty cool details, like the elbow joints on the red and green lions are fully chromed, as are the tails, which by the time that came out in the U.S., those had been Those had been just grayed out plastic. They didn't put the chrome on there anymore. Stuff like that. They had sharp teeth. The Matchbox one doesn't have sharp teeth. It's stuff like that that really sets it apart. And then the third major Japanese toy that came out before Voltron was known as a Jumbo Mashinder. We know them in the United States as Shogun Warriors, but it was the large, almost 2-foot-tall Go-Lion that was made out of shampoo bottle plastic, and it had the hands with the hinged jaws, and you know, it came with I believe it came with a sword. It might have been the American one that came with a sword, and the Japanese one didn't. I get that confused, but it was a really, really cool piece. And then after that, there were some smaller things that they had in Japan, kind of the equivalent of vending machine prizes or fast food prizes today. But those were the three major ones. And then for Dairugger, they had the same thing. They had the mini vehicle Voltron, and then they had the larger 15-piece combinable, which Matchbox ported over. The only difference from the American one and the Japanese one is that for the vehicle Voltron in Japan, it came with the sword, it came with decals to label all the different vehicles, and it came with little chrome antennas that you could put on the C-Team's submarines.
Right. So,
yeah.
Now, for the Beast King Go-Lion mm-hmm. version of that Mashinder thing uh-huh. we were talking about, if you look at the back of the – when it's fully posed and combined – there's actual, I don't know what you want to call it, little logos on the back of the black before it becomes the leg, mm-hmm. Where you can see that image of the Beast King Go-Lion logo.
Right.
And then on the other side, it says Japan 1981. Mm-hmm. So if people were wondering, you know, which one do I have, well, take a look back there and you'll see which one you have.
Right. And that's something that we'll get to as well with the Matchbox releases when we start talking about those. There's some detail like that we can throw in too.
Yeah. And a lot of those large ones came with their own sticker thing that you had to put the stickers on actually, right?
Right. That's correct.
Okay. So, all right. So moving forward then a little bit, what happened after the Shogun ones came out?
Sure. After the Shogun Warriors, well, Jumbo Mashinders in Japan came out. And then, of course, we had what I just mentioned, which were the Dairugger toys, because Dairugger actually was broadcast a few years after Go-Lion. After that, we all know the story that Ted Koppler and World Events went looking for some television shows to dub into English, and they found a number of shows that they licensed from Toy Animation. And they happened to license Dairugger, and they licensed Go-Lion, and they were going to license Lightspeed Electroid Albegus. And then they brought those shows over. At that point, what's interesting to note is that Go-Lion was actually already in this country. A lot of people don't realize is that Bandai, who had purchased Popey, the toy company Popey, had brought over a number of Japanese robots, just imported them right from Japan and called them the Godaiken series. And Go-Lion was one of them. He was in the styrofoam tray box. He just had a different cover art that was in English, and it said Go-Lion up the side. It came with all the weapons. It came with all the different features. The only difference was, like I said, it didn't have all the extra little chrome accents on the red and green lions. So very briefly, that was in the market. And then Voltron appeared. And as we know, that's when we saw the appearance of the Matchbox versions of these toys. You had the Matchbox minis for Vehicle Voltron and Lion Force Voltron, and then you had the three big Roman numeral sets. You had the
Voltron 1, Voltron 2, and Voltron 3.
Voltron 1, of course, is Vehicle Voltron. Voltron 2 was Albegus, the Gladiator Voltron set, and which with the notoriously fragile blue Gladiator part. And then you had Voltron 3, which is the one we all know and love, Lion Force. That was immensely successful. Everybody wanted it. I only got Black Lion because it was rather expensive back then.
There were two different versions. There was the $20 version and the $89.99 version.
Right.
And believe it or not, they still had a lot of sellouts for that and a lot of people requesting more. And Ted Koppler had even told me that when he went to FAO Schwartz back in that time, that Bandai and Voltron toys, like those original Bandai ones that you were just talking about, were on the shelf right next to each other. And people were going, bonkers for the Voltron ones since Voltron had come out, and the shelves were empty from where the Voltron stuff was, but the Bandai stuff was still on the shelves.
Which is kind of funny when those are the ones that had all the little weapons and missiles and stuff in
Right.
them.
It was just that they wanted the ones that were from the show.
Right. And the really cool thing that I remember from one of the DVD interviews with the creators of Voltron is that one of the story developers said that he ran out and purchased one of those original Japanese imports. It might have been the Godaiken. This was while they were still developing the show and they hadn't even launched it yet. And he brought it into the office, and people were just stunned by it. They were trying to share it between their cubes and share it between their desks because everybody wanted to play with this Voltron toy. And I think that was the real magic of that toy. I don't think it's ever been beaten, is just how accurate it was and how durable and the high quality. It was just an amazing piece. And it also had some unfortunate controversy because what ended up happening was the toy became so popular that the Japanese manufacturer had to subcontract the making of that toy to Taiwan. And when they did, the Taiwan versions ran into some difficulties because it was found that the Taiwan-made Voltrons had too much lead in the paint. And so it became a safety hazard. So the way you tell that apart, if you don't have it's kind of like what you're talking about with the Shogun Warriors Voltron, the Jumbo Machinder. If you turn over the lions, you'll see silver labeling on them. The silver labels on the original Japanese-made ones say GB36 Y and K, and then they have the actual Go Lion Japanese logo on the label. And then what you'll run into is you'll run into other labels that say Go Lion D, Go Lion B, made in Taiwan. Those are the ones that were made in Taiwan. Now, I believe the only ones that had the lead scare were Go Lion D, but there's actually a graphic you can look up online of the original bulletin that tells you how to identify the difference. So, and what's funny is that now the ones that were the focus of the lead scare, they're actually very collectible by Voltron collectors because a lot of them got recalled.
No, I think I even saw that there was a vehicle Voltron out on eBay for $10,000, and I don't think anybody's made an offer for that one.
Well, the vehicle Voltron was all plastic, so if I recall correctly, it was most of the Popey DXs, deluxes at that point, were called Chogokins because Chogokin in Japan means something like super alloy. Well,
or metallic,
yeah,
right?
super metallic. And then when Dirugger came out, they couldn't engineer that toy in diecast at that time. They didn't have the technology, so they made it all plastic. So that's why they only called it a DX, not a DX Chogokin.
And I remember reading some of those cards where it said metallic, but it was plastic or vinyl. And it kind of, threw people off. They were thinking they were getting a metal version, but it was really just a metallic look.
Right. And the disappointment about the vehicle Voltron from Matchbox, which was previously from Bandai, was that it as cool as it was huge, it was 15 inches tall. It didn't move. It only its arms moved, and that was about it. It
What's
just
the point?
yeah, it just kind of stood there. I mean, it's a great collector's piece, and it's a really cool piece in the history of Japanese toy making. Because it
Most of them talk about how they at least had grappling jaws, or the tails would move, the heads would move, all that kind of stuff. But if they don't move at all, what's the point?
Yeah, it moved at the arms and the elbows, and that was it. So.
All right, so we also had LJN toys, which were the motorized versions or the battery-operated ones. They had a whole line. They had like a line force and vehicle team assemblers, which were multiple lines of vehicles that joined together to form Voltron. They had the five motorized lines that joined together. They had the complete set of five called the Master Motorized Lion Force.
Right.
The Blazing Sword.
Right.
They had the Electro Laser Stun Gun, which was a battery-operated weapon with two electronic sounds and lights. And then the Lion Force and Vehicle Team Battle Risers, which was a battery-operated Voltron who moves forward on wheels, strikes an enemy, rises up, and walks on two legs. They had the Battling Black Lion, which was a motorized lion with flapping wings,
yep.
opening mouth, and hidden weapons that raise and lower.
Yep.
And then a Computer Control Lion Force and Vehicle Team Voltron, where it was motorized, had computer control, it was programmable, so it could move forward, right, left, and in a figure eight. And then the giant Lion Force Remote Commander was a giant remote control Voltron with movable head, arms, and wings and gripping hands, and it was over 2 feet tall. Now, when you say remote control, it was really just a remote that was on a wire going to the unit. So you had to stay close to it while you were moving it around.
Right, and the unit was what was radio controlled, because it was actually a Japanese Shogun Warrior Go Lion put on this radio control platform.
Right. And if you look in the notes for this podcast, for this episode, we're going to put a link to the commercial that they had put out for the Giant Lion Force Remote Commander. You'll see that on our notes. So go out and check that out. There was also a Voltron Ride-On, which was like a 16-inch pedal-powered black lion with opening mouth, which revealed the face of Voltron.
If I'd ever seen that in a store, I would have begged until I had gotten that. I never saw that, but I wish I had.
And then there was Lion Force Power Pack Road Racing, which was an electric racing set with motorized lions that turn around at your command and then the light-up eyes.
Right.
So that was the whole set of LJN toys.
Yeah, and the LJN assemblers that you mentioned at the beginning of that list, I just wanted to mention, people might remember those. They were the lower price point solid rubber Vehicle Voltron and Lion Force Voltron that had the solid yellow weapons, but they came apart, but they didn't actually transform. They were just solid rubber chunks that were shaped like the different limbs, and then you'd kind of like click them all back together and then set them back on your desk. It was right. Very low tech.
Yeah. And when you talk about low tech toys, oh boy, let's talk about like the little wind up thing where you twist it, wind it up, and it's got two plastic feet.
Right.
The 2 feet that just move forward. This was so small and so lame.
Yeah.
It was like a prize from a meal from McDonald's or something like that.
The one thing that LJN got, and they got it right, so we got to give them a little salute to it, is that they figured out that you really needed to provide the Blazing Swords in any version of Voltron with the Voltron you were buying. Because, you know, Matchbox, they shied away from that because of child safety regulations up front, and then quickly realized the Blazing Sword is the biggest part of this show for the kids. So they ended up offering for the Mini and the Matchbox Large the Blazing Sword and Shield in separate blister packs, which you know, you had to go out and get, you know, later and convince your parents to lay down another few bucks to get. Whereas LJN, you know, they really understood and packed it in with the motorized lions and with the assemblers and everybody else. They got it.
And of course, the Black Lion was the one that got the Blazing Sword, right?
Right. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay. So after the LJN toys, we also had Panache Place.
Yes, Panache Place, the legendary Panache Place, which for years and years was derided by Voltron collectors. There was like two camps. There was the camp that was much larger that said, the Matchbox Voltron is the one worth getting as a collector, and the Panache stuff was just a big misfire. Well, now, if you look online, it's funny to see how the value of Panache Place has just skyrocketed. You know, they've really started to go up in value. And I think that's due in large part to the fact that the Panache Place produced things that have never been recreated from Voltron since. You know, they had
like actual Robeasts.
Yeah, I wish they had the Robeasts in scale to Voltron, but they didn't. You're right, but they did. They made the Robeasts in 3¾-inch scale. They made the flying coffins of Doom. They made Lotor. Right. They made Zarkon. They made Hagar. They made the Castle of Lions. They made the first
Doom Commander.
Yes, the Doom Commander. They made the little fighter planes that would attack out of the Zarkon's ships. They made and those were cool. One of them fired discs. One of them had electronic light up stuff. They made the skull tanks that Lotor used to attack the Castle of Lions. They made the Castle of Lions. They made all.
Right.
They made all the pilots. They were.
What's the point of having those playsets if you don't have all the figures to play with them with? Right.
Right. I mean, do I wish that they'd made some other figures? Yeah, they were getting around to it, but they just didn't. It didn't happen. But they made the first action figures of our five heroes. Every kid who loved Voltron was killing for a Sven. That would have also happened, and it did, it almost happened. It didn't happen.
It didn't happen until later.
Right, exactly. They just had a great lineup, and they came out of the gate strong. And they were the only Lions that were ever offered for sale. And yes, they weren't as accurate to the show as the Matchbox ones. But they came with the mouth blades. They came with the tail cannons. They came with the little shoulder cannons and rotors and stuff like that. They had it all. And they had the sword and the shield. It was an amazing run. They were durable. I loved the Panache place. That's what I had growing up, and I know that makes me biased, but the prices are starting to reflect that. It really is a great line.
I think the villains was one of my favorite parts. It was going to be where you had the Galactic Terrorizers, which included Cossack, Merla, Throck, Hazar, Robi's Cyclops, Medusa, Rhino. All those were supposed to be in a new Castle of Doom playset, and I don't think that was ever introduced, was it?
No, it wasn't made, which is so unfortunate, because when you see that catalog from 1986 that shows what Panache is going to do for that year, and you look at the Voltron two-page spread, it's like, oh, what a lost opportunity, because they were going to go into, like you just said, all of those villains with their own castle playset to go up against the Castle of Lions, much like you had Castle Grayskull and Snake Mountain. You would have had the Castle of Doom and the Castle of Lions, and you would have started seeing the vehicle Voltron characters. They had Jeff. He was going to be part of, I think, the three pilots from the three teams were going to be there.
Yeah, Jeff was the captain of the air team.
Right.
Cliff was the captain of the land team, mm-hmm. and Crick was the captain of the sea team.
Right, and I believe in that photograph, what you also see is you see the like a vehicle ship that they were going to make. It was a little larger in scale. It wouldn't have become part of a larger robot, but they made Jeff's fighter that turns into the head of Vehicle Voltron. It doesn't. I don't think it would have turned into the head as that toy, but it would have been like his fighter plane that you could have flown. It was going to be such a cool line, and right. You know, I can't say enough good things about Panache.
Well, one of the things we also want to do as part of this podcast is we want to introduce Voltron fans to some of the great websites out there that are available that are archiving all these great Voltron toys that have been out there. There's, you know, the Action Figure Archive, the Voltron Archive. I mean, there's plenty of places out there, and we will list some links to some of those archives so that you guys can get a chance to go back and, you know, at least imagine what it would have been like to play with all this stuff back in the day. But the original Panache place did have a couple of Robeasts. They had the Mutilator.
Yeah, Mutilor.
Mutilor.
And Scorpius.
And Scorpius.
Uh-huh. And they had little club weapons. They had their corresponding coffins that you could buy separately so they could land and cause havoc on the planet Eris.
Can you imagine if you were a kid back then, though? Mom, I'd like to get a coffin. Do you mind? Can I get a coffin for Christmas, please? Back in 1985.
Yeah, and that was the funny thing too, was that
not getting you a coffin.
All of the action figures on the bad guy's side, except for three, they all had kind of signature vehicles. So, for example, the Doom – I always get them confused. The Zarkon Zapper and the Doom Blaster. I think the Zarkon Zapper was the one that they showed Prince Lotor flying. It had the red mm-hmm. cockpit. Then the Doom Blaster fired these spring-loaded discs, and it had a black cockpit. They showed that one being piloted by, I think, just the normal soldier. And then the red soldier, who was, I guess, the Doom commander, he was always pictured with the tank. Well, that
The skull tank?
Yes, the skull tank. Oh. And that left King Zarkon and Hagar out in the cold because they never got a Castle of Doom to hang out in. Uh-huh. So, and there were a few things that Panache, I wish, would have done. And that was the big thing I didn't want to leave out. They were going to make Sven. Right. They were going to make him in his Dr. No outfit. They were going to make him in his casual wear. But,
his Dr. No outfit.
But,
oh, boy.
But they were going to make him. Like, he was going to be part of the line, and I would have loved that. So many people have taken either a spare Keith or a spare Lance and painted them up black to look like Sven, the black accents on the uniform. They've customized Sven figures, and they look pretty good. I wish I'd have had one.
Yeah. Okay, so, after Panache Place had their way with Voltron, we also had Impulse Limited brought out some assortment of Voltron calculators, cameras, flashlights, wristwatches. And some of those were in such of a thing where it almost was like the unit would transform so that it would look like a Voltron, sort of, right? But it wasn't the idea that Voltron actually is a transformer, but in a sense, you did get some transforming capabilities out of some of these toys.
Yeah, they were innovative in the same way that the rest of the Transformers craze, and I don't mean that in the brand, I just mean that in the type of toy. These robot toys were very prolific back then that could transform into something else, and so a camera turning into Voltron was much the same as those. Do you remember those that line of wristwatches? They weren't related to any franchise. They weren't GoBots. They weren't Transformers, but they were wristwatches that were either shiny vac metalized silver, gold, or bronze, copper color, and they would detach from your wristband, and you could turn them into a little transformer. They were like, I think they were called TimeBot, and there were these little working digital watches that would turn into transforming robots. And kids had them all the time in the early 80s. And that camera, as infamous as it is part of that whole trend. It's a sign of the times.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of goofy looking, but it was a working camera. I mean, you can't deny that.
So. Right. And none of us would use it today with 35 millimeter film.
I might.
Yeah. And so we also had some of the HG toys. HG had brought out like the water guns and the blasters and also like the inflatable punching bag things. And I mean, there were probably a bunch of different things that they did for HG toys, but HG toys came out with a whole bunch of a line of things of Voltron. And yeah, Viewmaster also came out with the Voltron transparencies.
Right. They actually have a Voltron. They had the Voltron transparencies on a card, but you could also get a full-on Voltron gift set from Viewmaster that came with special artwork on the box. It came with a blue Viewmaster unit, and then it came with the Voltron transparencies packed into that. And you had like Voltron on the box fighting a Robeast. It was pretty cool. And the HG toys, just to back up on that one second, that commander set is hilarious because the commander set has a belt that you can wear. It comes with a Voltron pilot's pistol, comes with a little key that acts like a badge that you can wear, and it comes with Keith's red helmet for a kid size. But then you can clip the top jaw and horns of the Black Lion onto that helmet like a double stack when you decide you want to become Voltron, which I think is kind of funny.
All right, so if we want to move forward then, post-1985-86, after Voltron had stopped making original series and any original episodes, then we go back to 1997 when they came out with Voltron the Third Dimension.
Right.
And all the Trendmasters toys that came out as a result of that. You had talked about that in our last episode.
Yeah, that was really cool to see those come back out, mainly because one of the things Trendmasters did was they got the Popey diecast molds to do the diecast version again, the famous Matchbox. But this time what they did was they packaged it with the cannons and the mouth blades and the sword and shield. Now, they didn't have any of the spring-loaded missiles or anything, but they were able to give you the missile launchers and the cannons and stuff. They did some design changes to those, though. The paint colors are a little more pastel. For example, the yellow lion looks real lemony. And the blue and green lions have these weird fins on their haunches. They have these shoulder fins that come up that are unique to Trendmasters. And that's something that Trendmasters carried into the rest of their Voltron variants. They did a transformable version that was the same scale, but it was plastic. And I believe it had the opening, the tiny opening cockpits that you could put micro-sized pilots in. Then they had the famous 20-inch Super Voltron that had the it was panache style. It had the huge opening canopies that you could put the Trendmasters Voltron pilots in, the full-size 3 3/4-inch scale figures. And it had all sorts of things. It had bombs that the lions could drop, and it had swords and blades, and it was a crazy piece of machinery.
Right, and the figures, the action figures for Voltron the Third Dimension, they had Keith had like a jet pack.
Yep.
Lance came with a jumbo jet kind of thing.
Right.
Don't know what that was.
It was very off the wall, and the figures were all very very flashy. Like they kind of had this almost like shiny metallic color to them. Their uniforms were all very like they were very hyper future. They almost looked like Tron. It was pretty interesting the way they
it looked like they were in muscle suits.
Yes, which was a big thing in the 90s. You know, the Star Wars figures in 1995 through 97 mm-hmm. looked very muscular as well. It
was the power of the Force figure.
Yes, it was a weird trend.
Yeah, and Pidge came with his own like speeder, right?
Yes. Yes, he did. And they had different versions of Voltron as well. They had a stealth Voltron, and I believe they had one that was can't remember. It was something about animals, not lions though. It was a different. I think it was like dinosaurs, or someone will correct me on the podcast comments. But there were okay. different versions that they brought out. So they had like a stealth Voltron, and then they had another variant, and it was a very wacky line of toys that really showed a lot of passion for the property, but really took it in different directions. They even had a an electronic light up role playing blazing sword that's really rare now. It's hard to find, but that's a prize among collectors.
Right. I think my favorite out of the group is Prince Lotor. He had a firing pulverizer cannon and a cybernetic buzzsaw blade.
He was and never he just, more powerful.
He just looked really badass.
Yeah.
More so than any other thing I've seen him in.
Yeah, the line was really innovative, and it's becoming more and more collectible as the years go on. I remember just 2 or 3 years ago, you could pick up the Trendmasters version of the diecast, brand new in the box, never opened, for around like $70. And now you can't even find one on eBay. And if you do, they go for $150 or more, and they're climbing. The action figures are kind of the same way. Some of them, are still fairly affordable, and other ones that are very unique, they're going up in value.
Is the Stealth Voltron going up in value more so than the others?
I know that it's obscure. So it's collectible because it's rather rare, but I don't know. Sometimes rarity and desirability are two different things. I've noticed that with certain things like for example, Hagar the Witch from Panache, she's always loose, going to be just a few bucks, but any right. pilot loose with his helmet is going to be fairly challenging to grab off of an online auction because other people are going to want it as well. Even though more pilots were bought back then than Hagars. I mean, so you'd think there'd be fewer Hagars out there now,
Have you noticed on eBay what types of things get picked up quickly? What types of things stay out there a lot longer?
Yeah, the anything panache that is related to the pilots and Voltron and some of like the major attack villains, those get picked up pretty quick. The Matchbox stuff always moves. The LG high-end stuff that's not obscure kind of hangs around a little longer. So, for example, the motorized Voltron from LJN, the combiner that turns into the motorized little lions that turn into one Voltron, you don't see it as often. I will say that. And when it does come up, it does sell, but it doesn't sell for the same ravenous pricing that the Matchbox ones do.
Okay. So when Voltron came out in the 2000s, and they started really, I guess you could say it was the Jeremy age, right?
The Jeremy era. Yes.
Can we call it the Jeremy era?
Why not?
All right. So let's say the Voltron toys that were coming out in, like, say, post-2005. What kind of differences do we see in those toys that we hadn't seen in the originals?
Well, the major toys from post-2005 started with Toynami and the 20th anniversary Masterpiece diecast. That was a huge, huge bit of excitement for all of us Voltron fans, because not only were we paying hundreds of dollars to get a diecast Matchbox, and for the few of us that could find the original Popey, maybe we were lucky enough to do that, but I certainly wasn't back at that point.
Right.
The Toynami diecast signaled this kind of, like, let's take everything we know about toy technology now, apply it to a retro diecast construction, and make the ultimate Matchbox Voltron the way we'd make it now. And so what you got was this, you got this beautifully packaged five lion combining Voltron that was, I believe, if I recall from my display case, he's actually a little taller than the Matchbox Voltron once you get right down to it. Maybe by 3/4 of an inch. But he's so articulated. He can hold the sword in both hands. Everything's vac metalized. I mean, the robot's beautiful. It had the great packaging that looked like a huge tome, like a book that was on your shelf, and it would open up and it had this amazing artwork. It was just a great, great piece, and it was extremely well designed. It was our dream. It was like, especially for kids like me that didn't have the metal Voltron growing up. It was like, oh, now I can finally have a metal Voltron again, and it's awesome. Like, this is amazing. And the
20th anniversary collector set, the Masterpiece Voltron, is still considered pretty valuable, right?
Yes. It was a limited run. I believe it was limited to 15,000 pieces. Each one came with a certificate of authenticity. There were some people that, you know, they wanted a Voltron, but they prefer plastic. You know, they've moved on and they preferred the plastic construction. They liked the lighter weight, and they liked the – so Toynami, you know, ponied up to the table again, and they released two plastic versions of that same Voltron. They released – well, actually three. They released one that was there was just plastic. It was called the Voltron Lion Force gift set, I believe. And it came in kind of a window box format that looked very similar to a Japanese Popey. They kind of saluted the Popey with the packaging. And then they released one where it was the same thing, but it was – they had the plastic construction, but they used metal flake paint on the lion. So the lion still kind of had that metallic shine without having the die-cast weight.
Right.
Yep. And then they even had a special one that was packaged one lion per pair of shoes with Reebok. And that was interesting because those are plastic construction with the flat plastic paint, but they have chrome legs, which is keeping all this straight. It's kind of like, okay, one's got chrome and plastic and one's not, and one's got metallic paint. It's this whole thing. So, those were the four Toynami major Toynami editions of Voltron, and then Toynami then made the Jumbo Machinders again, the Shogun Warriors.
They made the 24-inch.
They made vinyl Voltrons for vehicle and Lion Force, and they labeled them Beast King Go Lion and Armored Die Rugger 15.
Limited editions,
yes,
right? Because only like 500 were made, right?
Right, and it was a very niche kind of market, because you have people that are completely devoted to the Shogun Warriors and Jumbo Machinders, and they'll collect all of them. There was even a guy a few years ago who had waited 15 years to find a Jumbo Machinder of a character called Garada K7 from a Japanese robot show called Mazinger Z. He ended up paying. It was the third known example in the world that had ever appeared. He bought it off of a Japanese auction site, and he ended up paying over $14,000 for it. And now he's got it in a – he has them all, and he's got it in a safe –
$14,000
because it was in a Bandai catalog, and no one had ever seen evidence that had ever been made since. But apparently it had, but it was canceled very quickly because kids in Japan didn't have a lot of space. So they would buy the hero robot. They would never buy the villain. So the villains got phased out very quickly. So Jumbo Machinders and Shogun Warriors are very collectible among Japanese robot aficionados. And so Toynami really did a good move making those two for that, like a nod to that whole line.
Okay. And then the 25th anniversary version also came out.
Was that the metallic paint one? I believe that.
Yes.
One. Yes. Yes. That was the one with the metallic paint, but it was still plastic. Yeah. That was
okay.
And then I believe they had some minis, some smaller. Toynami made some smaller Voltrons as well. They were they weren't transformable, combinable, but they were smaller. There's a smaller vinyl vehicle Voltron, and there's a smaller Lion Force Voltron, and I believe they released that also as some exclusive editions. Like one was all matte black, and it had like gold accents and. They had a few specials like that.
And then most recently, if you were able to get into the Mattel Voltron Club Lion Force, you get the exclusive action figures, lions that all form together, and this was all plastic as well, right?
Right. The Maddie Collector version was a classic Voltron style Lion Force, and it was a nod to the Panache place. It was kind of like the same philosophy that Toynami used with the Masterpiece, Mattel used with the Maddie Classics, which was, if we can take the Panache Place philosophy and make it the ultimate version, one that actually has pilots that can go in the lions, this will be our answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they made...
And this was where we saw our first Sven, too, right?
Yes, this is where we saw our first Sven. We saw a limited run of the Sven action figure that could only be gotten through the subscription rather than buying them day and date. And that was, for fans like me, that was the ultimate homecoming. It was like, finally, the circle closes. We finally get a Sven action figure. Because it's not that I didn't like the princess. It's just
right.
We thought Sven was cool. So,
yeah.
But the Maddie Collector one also stands as one of the tallest if you're not counting the Shogun Warriors. So
and the weird thing about these things is it comes with two heads. You get the head that is without the helmet on it, and you get a head that is with the helmet on it, and it came with the key too that operated the lions.
Right, because you with the one thing that we had back in the Panache line was we had removable helmets, but they really just looked like limp orange peels being slapped over their heads. They were kind of misshapen, and so having
right.
having the ability to have a character helmeted and look good, and then have the mullet and look good was awesome because I really wanted to have an action figure where Keith had his mullet. So,
and there's of course our favorite warning is on every single piece is about the choking hazard.
Yes, the choking hazard. And every figure came with a piece of a blazing sword so that by the time you got all five major pilots, you could form this large fiery blazing sword for your 24-inch masterpiece or Maddie Collector Voltron.
Right. I just remember all over the years seeing all these different things that have come out and you see the for people for kids 14 and over, for kids 15 and over. And I kept on looking at these things and saying to myself, you know, a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old could play with these. But then I saw the choking hazard and I'm like, oh, this is why, you know. So, you know, a lot of these things, the reason they became collectibles and stuff like that was because it was only meant for the older kids and for adults.
Right. Exactly. And that was the interesting thing about the Matchbox is that they stripped down that original Popey to make it possible for little kids to play with it safely, you know, because otherwise little kids wouldn't have had it. That's what I love too about the commercial for that Matchbox. If you go back on YouTube and you look for the commercial for the Matchbox Voltron Enforce, it's almost like they were trying to get a commercial to market as fast as possible, and they didn't have time to create a custom setting. So you see these kids flying these diecast lions in front of a generic backdrop of New York City at night. It's this weird – it's really weird. And they form Voltron like in this little set of Central Park. Like it's this really weird kind of commercial. It's pretty cool though.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Voltron in Central Park. But hopefully it's for a good reason and not because Planet Doom is attacking again.
Right.
All right. So after the Matty Collector, what did we have available to us?
Well, Matty Collector did have one other item that I would be, you know, remiss not to mention, and that is the Blazing Sword Voltron. It was a smaller, I believe it was either 6 or 8 inches tall, and it was really cool because it was super articulated. It was kind of like a modern Star Wars figure where it could just do yoga and do all these crazy things, and it had a standard sword, and it had a blazing sword that could hold it, and that was really popular. I understand that among our generation, that's very popular on office desks around the country.
I actually have one of those, so
nice.
Yeah, I've got those 30 points of articulation working all the time, and I stupidly recorded a video where I tried to do stop action animation with it, because with this one you can actually do that. And you can get it into all kinds of different poses and everything. And so I would move it a centimeter at a time, a centimeter at a time, a centimeter at a time. And I came up with this thing, and I just got so bored with doing so many shots and everything. I gotta give credit to those stop action animators, because they really they have to have a lot of patience, because they have to have their complete set moving at the same time that their action figure's moving. And they make little tiny changes all the time. And I tried to do it with this, and it didn't work out. It still looked choppy.
Well, you know what? I applaud you for your effort. Do you like that toy otherwise? I mean, is it
cool? Oh, yeah. It's great. I mean, it's the one that I can carry with me anywhere, do anything with, anytime, you know?
And it's accurate to the show, too, which is pretty cool.
Right.
It's one of the few that doesn't have the lion legs still on it.
Right. So we were hoping that, you know, somewhere along the line, Voltron Force would bring on a whole line of toys, and of course, it didn't. But right now at the Voltron.com store, you can get Voltron Force like party sets.
Yep, that's true, right? That's correct.
So there are some things out there that have Voltron Force on them, but not the ones you wanted. Not the toys, not the lions, not the Blazing Sword or the Voltcoms or things like that. So.
Yeah, when I interviewed Jeremy at WEP, he kind of gave us some insight into what was supposed to be made and the prototypes that he'd handled. And, you know, he said that he had personally played with some of the roaring lions that they'd created, where you push a button on their back and they'd rear up and roar. And there was ones that I guess that were going to have the different centers and different motorized features. And then, of course, the ones that they previewed at San Diego Comic-Con in 2011 were the main five combining lions, and they looked sharp. I mean, they looked like that. I would have bought that. It's really a shame that they never made them.
Yeah. So what we do have to look forward to, those is the possibility that there might be new toys coming out with new cartoons or a movie, yet to be heard about.
Right. And we have, you know, just announced that Toynami has come back into the fold, and I shouldn't say it that way. What I mean is that Toynami is, we've reunited with Toynami after the Matty Collector piece, and Toynami's come back, and they're going to do the ultimate version for the 30th anniversary of the diecast Voltron. And then from everything Jeremy and Bob told me, they have a bevy of other products that they have lined up that they want to execute as well. So,
well, Toynami also does the plush items, right?
Yes.
All right. So there could be a possibility of plush items coming out for Voltron, right?
Yes. I understand that there was some chatter on the Twitter yesterday about wanting a plush Voltron lion to cuddle with.
Right. I think people were harboring for the blue lion. Is that right?
I think that's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And then, of course, I've always wanted This is kind of an aside, but I've always wanted some plush Voltron house slippers for my feet. I wanted a yellow and
blue
lion.
Sort of
like
the bunny slippers?
Well, I kind of like the ones that are designed by a company called Happy Feet. I'd love to have like where they look like oversized cartoony tennis shoes, except they would be oversized cartoony lion heads. I'd love to have that.
Okay.
That's on my wish list. I don't know if there's – that's not a news announcement. I don't know if they're making anything like that or not, but I hope
those
they would.
Wouldn't be the first feet items. We did have the Reebok shoes, the Voltron Reeboks.
That's
Do you remember
true.
Those?
That's true.
Yes, but they weren't obviously in the shape.
Right.
So, yes, obviously we are looking forward to many more things coming from World Events Productions when it comes to all the different Voltron toys that could possibly be coming out in the future. So just because we're at the 30th anniversary does not mean that Voltron is old in any way, shape, or form. It could get even better from this point on.
That's very true. The understanding that I have is that Toynami is stepping up to the plate with some numerous ideas after the 30th anniversary. And, of course, Classic Media and DreamWorks are hard at work trying to line up other Voltron products.
Which is now DreamWorks Classics, right?
Yes, DreamWorks Classics. That's correct.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to all kinds of new things for Voltron toys. But we're going to wrap up this version of the Voltron podcast. And I want to thank you, Mike, for joining me again.
I hope it's been valuable to you, and I hope I didn't waste your time.
Well, I just want to encourage our listeners out there to, you know, come back with us and talk about your ideas about Voltron toys and you know, either your memories or thoughts about what you would like to see in a Voltron toy, and then post them on the comments on the Orange FM's Voltron notes page, and also on Facebook and on Twitter. So join us next time, and we'll talk more about anything Voltron, and we'll get some ideas from the listeners. We're still looking to try to get a few guests lined up, and we'll see what we can do for you. All right, until next time, let's Voltron!